that's basically my map. If there's anything you want to mention,
I'll specifically come up with it along the way.
Fair enough. What's up? This is Movies on Up. On Plymouth Island, no one ever dies unless you break the rules. The man that's making and breaking all the rules, as usual, is seated across from me. That is Mr. Dave Bissell.
All the rules.
Alive and well, that is Mr. Dave. I am Ryan. We are Movies on Up. On Plymouth Island, no one ever dies unless you break the rules is our tagline for this week. If you think you know what movie that comes from, send your guess to us in one of the following ways. You can email us, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can leave your guess on our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviesonup, or you can tweet your guess to us at moviesonup on the Twitter. If you are correct and we choose you, you will experience a moment of serenity when a Movies on Up prize package arrives at your door. This week, Matthew McConaughey and
Anne Hathaway. Yeah.
Show up in theaters in Serenity. And I think we've already done our favorite Matthew McConaughey movies.
Probably.
It's possible. We haven't done Anne Hathaway, but as we mentioned last week, Dave really likes the Joss Whedon Serenity from 2005. It's one of his favorite movies. It has snuck its way onto a couple lists, which we will talk about closer to the end of this episode. And I am surprised that once we started doing movie episodes, that it has taken us this long to get to a Serenity episode or get to a place where we could force it in. The movies have the same name, so this was a good enough time as any.
Yeah, like I don't know when else it could have been snuck in. So you release a movie named Serenity. Thank
Joss Whedon may do another movie here or there.
Yeah, no interest in this Serenity movie, but it did make me want to watch the old Serenity movie again. I watch it at least once a month.
Yeah.
We were supposed to record this a couple weeks ago, and I didn't rewatch the movie at that time because I looked on Sunday to see what I needed to watch, and I had just watched it Saturday. So
you've watched it twice since the last time we recorded?
Yeah, I have, yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
I watch it at least once a month. It's one of those at least once a month movies.
I guess that tells you how often we record. You could do the math on that. So this week, without further ado, it is Joss Whedon's Serenity from 2005, starring Nathan Fillion, Summer Glau, Chiwetel Ejiofor, and the rest of the crew. Opened at $10 million on September 30th, 2005, which was good for second place that week behind Flight Plan's $14.8 million. Tim Burton's The Corpse Bride, A History of Violence, and Into the Blue round out the top five for that week. The movie went on to gross $25.5 million, which puts it in 2,965th place on the all-time list, one spot above this beloved 1984 Wes Craven flick. Nightmare on Elm Street, yes. And one spot below 1981's Only When I Laugh, which is not interesting at all, but it would have been far more interesting if Only When I Laugh would have made about $20,000 more. That would put Serenity between Freddy and Michael Myers. Halloween 2 is in 2,963rd place. A movie that we will talk about in a couple weeks, kind of. Memento is a couple spots ahead in 2,958th place. And Alex Garland's Ex Machina is down in 2,973rd all time. If I'm being honest, there are a ton of movies that have grossed about $25 million. And that would be a really fun movie list to do. It's completely random.
Memento and Ex Machina, I love. Serenity, I love.
Yeah, Nightmare on Elm Street.
Halloween 2.
Yeah. Yeah, John Carpenter does not like that, so we wouldn't put it on our list. But believe me when I tell you, if you go to the Box Office Mojo domestic charts and you go to the 2900s, there are some really good movies in there. So I guess good movies can make $600 million. They could also make $25 million. Doesn't necessarily mean they're not just as good. $25 million may not seem like a great deal of money, but it is almost more impressive that this movie was even released, let alone how much money it made, given that Firefly lasted just one season. And
not
Fox
even
never,
a full season.
Right, they never even bothered to air all episodes that were made. And the 12 that they did air, they didn't put them in order. So a show that the network really didn't give too much of a shit about was able years later to come out with a movie. And according to an article I saw on Box Office Mojo, it is only the second time in history, to that point, that a movie had sprung out of a TV show that lasted less than a year. Dave's thinking if he can come up with the other time it happened.
No, I don't.
From the files of the police squad.
Okay, Naked Gun.
Naked Gun, exactly.
Three of them.
Yes, and it made significantly more money, but that's neither here nor there. It's the point is, generally, a television show that isn't that well
watched.
Yeah, that's fair. It's not that it wasn't liked, but it wasn't watched. That's why Fox pulled it. You're going to have a tough road to hoe to get a movie made out of that. But nonetheless, Whedon got the movie made. And that article went on to say that it was Universal's desire to get him into their system that gave him the opportunity to make that movie. At the time, Joss Whedon was the writer of the Buffy movie and the TV stuff, and a screenplay for a Pixar movie starring a cowboy and an astronaut. The studio exec, he was quoted in the article, "We actually like the director," as did Disney 7 years later when he would make the two Avengers movies that earned about $2.9 billion worldwide. Though aside from the Avengers, he's only directed Much Ado About Nothing.
Which he did like in a week off from Avengers.
From Avengers, with a lot of familiar faces to Joss Whedon. Nathan Fillion was in that as well. So Whedon's one of those weird guys that has got a ton of money in box office, but not a lot of directing credit. It's hard to say this, but the guy is probably better known for being a writer, though he directed two of the most financially successful movies of all time.
Yeah, and it's one of those that when Joss Whedon was hired for Avengers, it made sense. Even though he didn't have this massive filmography, it's like, oh yeah, that makes sense.
He's genre stuff.
Give that guy that franchise. It made perfect sense.
The king of the fanboys.
And I mean, he's earned it. Like, yeah. He's had a hell of a career, so it's directing credits don't really show a lot, but his everything else credits, he's done a lot of stuff.
I mentioned the fanboys. That's the Universal guys wanted access to that fan base because even in 2005, Joss Whedon was a name that within his fans carried a lot of weight, and that's a guy that people will come out to support his stuff. And I think a good portion of that opening, that $10 million, is credited to the Firefly fanboys. Browncoats, I believe you call yourselves. Dave was a fan of the show. He was one of the 15 people that watched it.
No, I came late.
Oh, really?
I was late.
You watched it when it was already on DVD.
Yeah, that's like the one good thing that came out of the band I was in for 4 years was they got me hooked on Firefly. And I remember trailers for Serenity coming out and thinking like, that looks good, but I haven't seen the show, so I'm not going to go see it. So I didn't see Serenity on the big screen. I didn't watch Firefly while it was out. I caught on shortly after, but it was DVD. I'm a binge watcher. I flew through Firefly and then I watched Serenity all within like a weekend. By the time I was onto it, Serenity was already on DVD.
So you didn't have a long gap between the two to really build up?
I had maybe 20 minutes. I think I went pee and made some dinner.
Interestingly enough, I kind of came to things the opposite direction. Being a Star Wars guy, I saw Firefly, and I saw, you know, a lot of Han Solo and Mal and a lot of the Millennium Falcon in the Serenity. So I thought, all right, this is probably something I would like. I may have had a vague idea that it was based off a TV show that I didn't watch at the time. It's probably not the ideal way to go about things, watching the movie before the show that it's based off of. But nonetheless, I give Whedon a lot of credit for writing a movie that could be complete nonsense for folks that didn't see the show, but he wanted to be inclusive. So he made that movie with people like me in mind. We may not have had complete insight to the personalities of all the characters, but I knew how the pieces fit together.
I'm a cold open guy. Like, I love openings of movies and shows and stuff. And this is one of the perfect ones. The brief history of how we are, the brown coats, the war, you touch on the Reavers, and then you have Simon breaking River out, transition into the operative and his mission, on to Serenity for a long take where you meet everybody in the crew. It's 10 minutes of filmmaking. After that 10 minutes, you know what you're into. You know the backstory. You know everything you need to know for this movie. It's not overly long. It's not overly complicated. You don't have all the stuff from the show that is irrelevant. It gives you the good bits. that you need to know moving forward, and it gets going.
Part of that might be there was only 14 episodes to pull backstory from, so it wasn't like six seasons of this mythos to pull from. You mentioned it. Here are the good guys. You meet them all. Here are the monsters, the Reavers, and here's the government that may or may not have created them. Go. It's a simple premise that it wasn't necessarily launched by the show at all. It just takes the elements of the show, and here's like a, I don't want to say it's not a bottle episode, but it just felt like a really long episode of the show.
In a way, yeah. And people ask me, when I talk up Serenity, it's like, oh, I never watched Firefly. You don't have to. It's an appetizer, pretty much. Like, you can enjoy pizza without breadsticks, but pizza and breadsticks is better. You can watch Serenity and watch one of the best science fiction movies ever made. It's a great science fiction movie. It's self-contained, but if you watch the show and then watch it, you come in with attachment. So some of the stuff matters more.
Yes.
Some of the stuff you get answers to that weren't answered, that you didn't know were questions if you didn't watch it. So I think it adds to it, but it's not necessary.
I use myself as the perfect example for that. One of the best things that the movie had going for it didn't have a thing to do with the show, and that's The Operative, who, according to Dave, is one of the best movie villains of all time. So I came into Serenity first, and I see that character. Now imagine my disappointment when I borrowed the DVDs from Dave, and there is no analog for The Operative in the show. There's nobody as cool as that. Maybe we miss some of the backstory with Mal and how the crew got together, but you don't miss a thing with The Operative. Everything you need is right there.
Nobody near as cool. That's cutting short Jubal Early. Jubal Early ruled. Now that I remember, I watched this show, and then my band actually had a show, so I couldn't watch Serenity till the next day, because I remember being watching it, and I watched the last episode, and it was great. And at the show, I'm just talking about, like, Jubal Early's awesome. Like, I wanted more of him. I wish we could have got more of him. That's a great villain. And they're like, oh, just wait. And then I watch Serenity, and it's like, oh, fuck you, Jubal Early. Keep floating away out there. I got The Operative now.
Where was the show you played? Do you remember?
Probably Cedars.
That was my guess.
That's where most of them were.
That's where I saw you guys. I enjoyed that for all his bluster about being a bad guy, and he did some bad things, The Operative kind of ended up doing the right thing in the end. Spoiler alert. A bit like Mal, he seemed to grouse about doing good things, but he'd always do them. I find it interesting when the hero and the villain are a lot alike. Almost you could see a scenario where maybe things happened differently for Mal, and he went down that path, where maybe his side won the war, and he's doing exactly what The Operative's doing. I like when it's just not so cut and dry. It's not so easy to root for one guy and despise the other guy, because they did a good job of, this is why The Operative's doing what he's doing for the greater good.
I mean, they're both soldiers.
Right.
Mal was a brown coat. His team lost, so now his life is running from him. And he's got this purpose in River. Mal's a guy who's looking for a purpose. He lost the war. He's got this soldier mentality where it's, I need a mission, and this is my mission, and he found one. And The Operative, his team won, so he wants a mission. He just gets one. So they are the same mentality there. Maybe The Operative's willing to go a little further, and that's one of the best lines is when he's talking, and he's trying to level with Mal. And after just killing two or three whole communities trying to get to him, and Mal says, I don't murder children. And he says, just calmly, I do when I have to. Holy shit. Like, it's so cold and so calm. And that's why Chewie is so chilling, because he's not doing this because he's evil. He's doing this because he has a mission, and that's what he's doing. Accomplish that mission at all costs.
Because to him, either he's just blindly following orders, which I think is more the case, or the outcome of him not accomplishing his mission is worse than killing kids.
Yeah, and I mean, he is blindly following orders. Yes. He even says, like, I'm not in the business of secrets.
His change of heart at the end.
Keeping them is. You know, secrets aren't my business. Keeping them is. So Chewie's so good in this. And I've watched the commentary with Whedon so many times on this. And one thing he says is he liked Chewie so much that he was trying to figure out ways to get him in the movie more because of how good he was. And Chewie's the one that said, like, is he more frightening the less you see him? Should I just show up?
It's Hannibal Lecter.
That's the example that was made, was Hannibal Lecter. Like, he's like, I think it's more impactful the less I'm on screen. It is. When Chewie's on screen, those are damn good scenes. And every scene he's in is great. The fight scene, especially at the climax, is one of my favorite movie fight scenes ever. These two guys, that they're stubborn. That's all it is. The whole idea of the operative is great. And we'll talk about that more because I think it'll lead into one of your points that you want to get to. But, like, it's just this guy who doesn't have name or rank. He just has missions, and that's what he's doing. And Mal just happened to get in the way.
Juxtaposing the two, you know how, I guess from my perspective, after watching Serenity, which I like Firefly, but I kind of think I sort of like Serenity better.
Oh, I do. I'll say that without a doubt.
A couple reasons. Maybe it's just because that's how the way I saw them. But the things you see in Serenity, you know, the great villain, you mentioned the fights at the end. River's pretty badass in this. You go back and watch Firefly and you're like, oh, holy shit, this is a completely different character.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and that's why it was a nice surprise for. Yeah. It's alluded
to. It would have been a really great surprise.
It's built up to that, like, oh, she has these weapon tendencies, but yeah. You don't know. And then the movie comes and she just releases. It adds to it. You understand Mal's surprise. Like, do you know her? I really don't. Because you don't. That's not the girl we spent 12 episodes with. Yeah, she had some good shots with a gun in one of the later episodes, but she never did that. So
right. That
was a great surprise. It was alluded to but never seen, and then it's in its full glory.
Which would have been cooler had I seen things the other way around. It's like if you were to, the first Star Wars movie you watch is episode 2 and you see Yoda flipping all around at the end, you're like, wow, he's pretty capable. But yeah, it just kind of, it really sets you up for the character of River to just disappoint the hell out of you for the show. But I talked a lot about the end of the movie because, I mean, it is exciting as hell. You get to see a whole different side of that character of River. You get a great fight scene between two very like-minded.
Not only is the fight between the operative and Mal one of my favorite, like, climaxes ever, that whole sequence with them holding off the Reavers, the whole third act of this movie. But when you talk about goosebumps and chills and, like, how certain movies just have moments, I've seen this movie, it has to be over 100 times. Every single time River stands up in the hallway and says, now it's my turn, and runs down the hall as it's illuminating, I get goosebumps just talking about it. I watched it earlier today, and I got goosebumps. And that scene is so well done. That whole third act from them landing, quote-unquote, landing the Serenity.
Yeah.
From then on, the whole movie is just so well done.
I mean, I would even back it up a little bit more to that speech. That he gives the I am to misbehave speech that Dave.
I mean, the whole movie.
Right,
I love.
Yeah. It's not that it's a slow burn up to that point.
Oh, no.
But once he lays forth, like, okay, we're going to go for this. The plan and how the rest of the movie does unfold, like, they've kind of got you at that point. And he doesn't let go. There isn't a wasted second for the end of the movie. Everything's packed and there is a certain amount of tension. You know, they've shown that they're already going to off some characters from the show. So now everybody, it's not like watching something where you know these characters
and
are okay.
And that's what he mentions in the commentary. Is he's like, Book hasn't really been involved, so his death is okay, whatever.
Right.
But he's like, I want you to feel the stakes. He's like, so if I kill one character here, that gives you the possibility that, hey, maybe this is a Wild Bunch scenario and that they all die. So, like, you kill that one character and then all of a sudden this one gets slashed, this one gets shot. Oh, it's not a typical TV show. Like, there are stakes here and they may or may not come out.
Because they don't have to come back for the next season.
Yeah, and it was great. Just the whole plan. Like, I mean, I love that because that shows the operative is human. When those ships come out, it's just, shoot, somebody shoot. Like, it shows that he's human. There is fear. As calm and collected as he is, he does have the ability to fear. And it's, every moment is hit fantastically in this.
I mean, the movie does wrap to a really, like you said, one of the best climaxes that you've ever had. But there was a comic book that takes the story from here. And there's been talk basically every time either Whedon or Fillion do any kind of panel, people always ask them about, well, are we going to get, you know, another movie or a possibility of a television show? And more they've been sort of on the negative side of that. We've got a lot of sequels, a lot of reboots, reimaginings, even bring back old television shows. But because the way this movie ends, it puts a nice bow on the events of that movie. Is it better to just be left with this rather than make a Toy Story 4?
Wraps it up. They're all on the ship again. The cast of the TV show are all together. The ship's put together, and now they're free to just do what they want to do. They're scoundrels. They're
pirates.
Smugglers. Yeah, they're smugglers. I think that's all you can do. I think the last episode of the show would have just ended with them just going on with their lives. That's how Rescue Me ended. You had all these seasons of these guys being firefighters, and then all of a sudden, the season finale, they're still firefighters. They still wake up the next day, and they have fires to fight. So that's how I feel the show would have ended, is just they're out doing more jobs. I'm fine with the crew of the Serenity. I'm done with that. I would not be opposed to going back to that world. I would not be opposed to revisiting that world with the Federation.
The Alliance
whatever, and Browncoats and everything. I always thought like a Shepherd Book like prequel would be cool, because I feel like, I think Shepherd Book was an operative before he found the book. He was an operative. So I think a story of that, or even a story following an operative, I think would be cool. Just think there's cool stories to tell in this world. I don't necessarily need more Mal Reynolds or any of them. So if Whedon said like, oh, we're going to revisit that world, it picks up 15 years after Serenity, after the whole Miranda thing has come out, like, here's this world now, completely different characters. Okay, I'd be for that. If Whedon wanted to go in this fish tank again, I'm for it. But I don't necessarily need the same fish.
You're seeing that with some larger properties. I mean, Star Wars can have
The Mandalorian.
Yeah, they can have a television show that doesn't have Luke Skywalker or Rey or R2-D2, because they created an entire galaxy, which is kind of impressive for Whedon to have done so in just a handful of TV, one season of TV and a movie, to have enough of a skeleton there to have more meat left on those bones. And the idea for this movie had been in the works basically as soon as Fox pulled the plug on the show. And that's not to say that the story was fleshed out at that point. But you know, if this is the last time that you see the crew of Serenity, whether it's because they go in a different direction for a potential show or they just don't do anything anymore, as far as wrapping up the television show, did you think that it did a good job of doing that? I mean, you said that's how you imagined it would wrap. Is there anything, you know, from the TV show that you're like, I just wish this would have been answered?
No, because I feel like,
I kind of feel like the TV show did a good job of wrapping itself up.
Yeah, for being unplanned. But like, what he did was tell this story that was told perfectly and wrapped up in a 2-hour movie, but I could very well see this stretched out over 10 episodes. I could see them running from the operative and dueling with the operative occasionally and coming across Miranda and finding out the secret and figuring out River's gifts over like a 10-episode final season. So you get that just in a 2-hour movie, and I was fine with it.
That's something that they do very well in England. They'll have a couple seasons of something, and they'll get out while it's still good before.
And they do a 6 to 8 to 10-episode thing instead of 23.
Right, yeah, before they jump the shark, for lack of a better word. But I do think that we can infer what these characters are going to do based on, like you said, they're smugglers. This is what they do. So their ship's rebuilt. They're crewed appropriately for what they're going to continue to do. I don't think we need to see anything else, with the possible exception of there's been this giant revelation in this universe that's going to come with some consequences. So it would be interesting to see what the consequences for the government are at that point. It would be fun to see maybe an uprising of some brown coats that are trying to take down the government, and they use this as a platform to do so. But, you know, if we don't really see Captain Mal anymore, I agree with you. I think that's okay, because I think that, you know, Whedon, his greatest strength is he's a very good storyteller. And I think he told some very good stories. And this one, it's almost like he put a bow on the bow, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, and I'd go back if he wanted to. I'm happy with it if he doesn't. I mean, it's really one of those things where I'm happy with what I got. I don't need more. I would not complain about more.
He's a guy that if he went back to do it, there's another story that he would like to tell, and I think people would trust him to do it. There was news, I think, last week of Ghostbusters 3, and is there more meat on that bone? I don't know. Reitman's got the last name to do it, but it's just not quite the same, I guess. But somebody like Joss, he would be the only one doing it. And if he came back, then I would feel very confident in knowing that, oh, there's more to tell here, and it's going to be stuff that I like.
Especially now that legacy sequels are like such a thing. Star Wars,
yeah.
Jurassic Park, and now Ghostbusters, and Halloween. And I could see it with Mal being a bit character, kind of like Han Solo was in Force Awakens, but I'll trust Whedon.
Yeah, that's the
and
thing.
Whedon,
I mean,
We Trust, I think, was like our first episode title.
Yeah, he's got the clout now that if he were to go to... And it doesn't even have to be like a Fox anymore. He could go to
Netflix
or Prime, Hulu.
Amazon.
Yeah, and say, hey, I want to do, even if it's just like two seasons or a limited event, like Netflix has done a lot recently, hey, I want to tell 12 more Serenity stories or in that universe. He would have no shortage of people willing.
He could say, I want to do an 8-episode operative series.
Yeah, companies would buy that, they would produce that, and people would watch it for sure. You just slap from the director of the Avengers and the writer of Buffy, and you're fine. Interestingly enough, they let him do this because they saw his potential as a director, and because he succeeded so much in that, anybody would let him do this again, despite the fact that neither the show nor the movie have been a commercial success. I guess that's like the ultimate compliment for him in his career, is that there is something that people do enjoy. And he could keep making it if he wanted to satisfy a relatively small amount of people, because he's satisfied a lot with everything else he's done.
I really love Firefly and Serenity.
I understand that, yeah. I do not love Snow. And I think that Mads Mikkelsen's character in Arctic is not going to love Snow either by the end of that. That movie comes out next week, and it got us to thinking about movies that take place in the snow, or feature an awful lot of snow, which is very broad, which generally leads to some very good movie lists, because we can kind of take that anywhere. So to find out where we go, spoiler alert, it is in the snow. Come back next week, but until then,
keep it up.